cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. That's my name, Mr. Matt Wilmer. On the board, S&P futures down 10 bucks. NASDAQ futures down 35. Dow futures down 68. I say down because they were up 7 last night when I checked during that interminable baseball game. Andy, what are we going to do about baseball regarding the time?
What are we going to do about it?
Well, what is anybody
you got a doing? Mouse in your pocket?
Well, that's what they used to say on the trading floor. Hey, who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket, buddy?
I'm not doing anything about it.
It's as you have mentioned on many occasions, it's not so bad when the starters are in there, but when the relievers come in there, and they came in what, the third inning last night?
Well, yeah, when it gets into the playoffs, the starter has a very short leash.
Yeah, and because they just have to keep making moves. I don't get it. I mean, the guy's in there because he's your best pitcher.
Well, the manager knows that they have, you know, 12, 13 pitchers at their disposal, and they know obviously how important the game is, especially in Houston's case. They lost game one at home. They could not afford to lose game two, so it was almost a must-win game. And you got guys throwing 95, 96 waiting, and that can give you one inning, two innings at a time or whatever, and that's the strategy in the playoffs.
Well, yeah, I guess. I mean, still, it's like, but then you see these guys every time you give up a hit, even if it's a two hopper, it seems like it's a little much.
I agree. I think in those instances, I mean, I thought in several of the playoff series over the last 4 years that the Cubs were in, Madden was very quick, too quick in my mind to pull certain starters. Kyle Hendricks in game 7. He had a plan that he was going to Lester and Ross no matter what. And even though the Cubs had a 5-1 lead and Hendricks was pitching pretty well and he gives up like a bloop hit, he went to Lester and Ross and they promptly gave up two runs right away and got the Indians right back in the game. Now, I'm not saying Hendricks wouldn't have given up two runs either. I don't know, but it just seemed very quick and there's a lot of instances of that, but that's what managers are going to do.
Well, it seems like, you know, and I almost want to go into my, same story I was just giving you regarding the pace of the game. There's so much time there that it seems like the dudes, they're like you and me. They get bored. Two hits and they see the guy walking around out there and you see him talking to the other guy and you see him like what the hell? I mean, you know what I'm saying? And then all of a sudden they run out and they make a change. I mean, it's like the oddest damn thing, but it's obviously that's what we're dealing with. But I think relief pitchers in general seem to me like 10, 15 seconds a guy slower than the starter.
No question about it. They're really slow. Because they're not trying to get into any sort of rhythm to pitch in a long situation. They're getting up there and typically facing, you know, one batter or just one inning, and they are going to try to execute basically air it out for that one inning.
Well, I'm searching here. If I'm stumbling around here, I'm searching over the article I sent you last night regarding the Trump situation. Of course, it turns out I sent you a blank email without the thing in there, so it's a good thing you didn't pick it up and open it up. Anyway, what do you make of the, since we have you, we'll talk about some sports for a minute, maybe Kevin might even opine. What do you think about Verlander's shot about the baseball?
So I didn't hear about that until you were telling me about it, but for those that missed it, like I did, apparently, and I'll search and try to find an article here to tweet it out, Justin Verlander, a star pitcher of the Astros, said that it's a completely different baseball in the playoffs than what they used in the regular season. And for those that follow baseball, the ball was jumping off bats all season long at an alarming rate where guys who are not capable of hitting opposite field home runs were hitting opposite field home runs like 12 rows deep, like no problem. Guys were hitting home runs off the end of the bat. Guys were, a couple of the really strong guys were hitting home runs on a broken bat.
Yeah.
And
I saw Rizzo hit a few after he choked up.
Yeah, and pitchers are like, "What the hell?" Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, and it was just noticeable, and the numbers back it up. Home runs across the board were at an all time, you know, high since the steroid era. So, you know, certainly not saying there were more than back then, but more than the last 20 years for sure. And guys that just don't typically hit the ball that far were doing it. And so everyone thought the balls were juiced, and maybe they were. They're certainly, you know, wound too tightly or something. And apparently for the playoffs, they seem to be deadened. And Verlander called it out, and you mentioned that some of the stats were backing that up.
Here, I'll try and be faster. I'll read this first. If I'm going to read the paragraph, I better give you the article. Hannah Kaiser. Justin Verlander says the fluctuating baseball dictates the game. In the first inning of the first game of the long-awaited championship series between the American League's biggest juggernauts, one of baseball's biggest stars, figuratively and literally, which would be, what's his name, the guy in right field, hit a ball 102.8 miles per hour at a launch angle of 32 degrees to left center. Since 2015, batted balls with those specs have produced an 820 average. Wow. The home run 76% of the time. That's in all parks. In Minute Maid Park specifically, there were four balls hit with an exit velocity between 102 and 104 and a launch angle between 31 and 33 degrees during the 2019 season. All four of them were home runs, two of them to left center. So all four of four went out during the season, and this one evidently didn't even make it to the warning track. And Aaron Judge hustled out of the box, was somewhere around second when center fielder George Springer caught the ball at the warning track, just a long, loud out. When the Yankees were winning big time, but said that the they think that the average ball is going 5 feet less. See, and he, you know, he claims he's taking the party line that he didn't quite get it all right. See,
of course,
which he probably didn't. But evidently, they're saying now. But the interesting part is the Cardinals manager Mike Schilt said that the. Thought the ball that Marcell Ozuna hit should have gone out, but crucially, the team's analytic department had done their own research and concluded that the ball is flying 4.5 feet fewer on average in the postseason. But the funny part is you and I are always, not really arguing, but just kind of going back and forth, old-time baseball versus whatever. And, you know, interesting to see what Kevin's opinion is on some of this. We can talk to him Wednesday. Unless he's around now, he could call in, but he says the difference is so dramatic in the stats. He said during the year that there were more extra base hits than there were singles or something, and that the weakest guy in the lineup, he didn't want to take the bat out of his hands for a bunt or anything because, I mean, he could put it out. So the managing is way more toward like what you're talking about than what I would prefer and what I remember. But they're saying now this 4.5 feet puts all that other stuff back into play. That now the number eight batter probably can't hit it out or probably won't hit it out because it's a little bit deader, and you got to go back to, you know, hitting and running and hitting behind the guy and the other kind of stuff. And it's pretty interesting that it would make that much difference.
Yeah, absolutely. And but you can see why when guys are so able to hit the ball out of the ballpark this season, why you would tell them, you know, hey, let's be a little more station to station because we don't want to get out, you know, we don't want to give that other team free outs. We don't want to run into outs on the bases trying to steal bases or take the extra base because everyone's capable of hitting a home run, for better or worse. And you could see why, you know, teams and organizations and managers would act that way. But taking that 5 feet off, you know, they're going to have to rethink that because that's not going to work.
Did you write this article? Setting aside this October downturn, the increased so-called juiciness of the ball dating back to the second half of 2015 has made home runs so accessible that they've crowded out other forms of offense. Stolen base opportunities were down, moving the guy over. All the risks that you would take, unnecessary risks you would view now to have a base runner get out on the base path, trying to go from first to third, trying to stretch a single to a double. They slowly worked their way out of the game this season. Because every single hitter in the lineup can go deep the next pitch. This is Verlander talking about. When you're playing a game where there's more extra base hits than there were singles, why would you risk that? I understand that.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And that, in my opinion and in your opinion, and we're in complete agreement on this, is not a better game.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. Because I think the same thing that maybe juiced up the balls or something. I don't know if it makes a difference in the pitching, but maybe it's just swinging for the fence.
Well, I mean, again, if you know that when you make solid contact, the ball's going to go at least 5 feet farther than it should, I'd be swinging for the fence, too.
Yeah.
Because I've always had warning track power and never had home run power.
Yeah.
I've always been able to fly out deep to the left fielder in softball. I could do that every time I go up. I could hit a deep fly ball to left field every time. But I've never been able to, like, put it over his head. It's just always been...
For you to get one out there, it's got to be a gapper.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, if I had that, you know, if they juiced the clincher softballs and I could do that, I'd be swinging for the fence, I can tell you that.
Well, I mean, I wonder if the listeners we're talking about were using this, you know, baseball jargon, like I use trading jargon, I probably shouldn't, but if ever you want to spend actually, it's a very interesting morning. Whenever I used to go out to spring training, I'd head over to, well, I don't know where they're at now because they moved the place, but there was a Hoboken Park, and on the block or two before, the other side of the parking lot, was Fitch Field, where the minor leaguers worked out. And it was, the Cubs had a, I'm sure they do at the new place too, but they had a nice arrangement where if a guy's playing a minor league game down the block and you want him to pinch hit in the seventh of the major league game, you just, you know, send a car a block down and grab the guy. So everybody was pretty close. But you'd go there in the morning and you'd sit down and you'd watch all these guys. The choreography, I always think it's fabulous, man. It's just me because I love baseball, but the choreography of a whole team doing practice, if you've never seen it, they've got the screen in front of the first baseman, right, so he can't get whacked, so he can do his stuff. There's a screen in front of the pitcher, so you can't kill him. And in the, I think it's in the left, those two circles up by the home plate, one on the left and one on the right, they put wood out there, and they drop him down. And the one on the left, there's a guy hitting ground balls. So he's hitting to the left of the screen where the pitcher is, and he's hitting to the third baseman, shortstop, and second baseman. And they can throw to the first baseman, because he's behind the screen. Then you've got the guy in the right box is hitting fly balls. What am I doing here?
Did you turn your TV on?
No. These financial press things I'm on all morning so I can look and see anything's happening for everybody. Well, they always, now everybody's got somebody talking on there.
They pop up ads and everything.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff. So anyway, so and the guy on the right's hitting fly balls. And then meanwhile, people in the backs have the big screen, and they're hitting out to the outfield as well. And there's all these dudes out in the outfield, essentially shagging flies. As they said, the natural. Go out there and shag some flies. Well, you'll see a guy hitting, and all the outfielders are lined up 10 feet in front of the warning track, right? And the guy's hitting one guy. He's hitting another guy. Hits another guy. All of a sudden, somebody comes up, a guy like you, big more muscle dude like Thomas. And all of a sudden, they all turn around and walk back 10 feet. And all of a sudden, they're all standing on the warning track, and the guy's whacking them to the warning track. The next guy will come up, and all of a sudden, they start flying over the fence. You know, so every guy's kind of got his power. I mean, you'll catch one down the line once in a while where you do something, but it's normally rare for some guy who's essentially got warning track power. Who's the guy that the Cubs had him? And he was, this is going back in the steroid era, the lefty, a Hispanic name. He was on the Cubs, and he was a solid hitter. I mean, it was like 310, 315. He had warning track power. Once in a while, if he'd pull one, he'd get one in the first row. He went to Houston or Phoenix or Arizona,
Luis Gonzalez.
Yeah, and all of a sudden,
I think he started doing steroids.
Yeah, I'm saying all of a sudden the guy's not second or third row anymore. He's like 20th row.
He was like hitting 40 home runs a season. Yeah. All of a sudden,
now, his first couple of years, he was, you know. And guys do get stronger.
They do, but he was. I mean, that was just to me. That was. He was a guy who I loved, Gonzo. He was a left fielder, you know, mostly for the Cubs, and a real solid player, like you said, a hitter, light power, okay defensively, you know, but not really, you know, a standout necessarily. Just a solid player. And then, yeah, he went to Arizona and maybe one or two other places, and yeah, all of a sudden he became a MVP candidate, 35, 40 home runs, you know, just hitting bombs. Like, what in the world?
Yeah, it was some of it might have been the ball. Well, when did Major League Baseball buy Rawlings?
I don't know. I have to look it up.
I mean, they were only a single supplier. You know who used to make all those balls? Was a clincher, DeBeer. They had the factory forever. They just made them under a license from Rawlings. They own the factory. Because I knew the guys that owned the place. The one of the guys was a big friend of Robin's. Robin used to come on the show.
It says here, a quick Google search says, it was announced on June 5th, 2018, that Rawlings was sold from Newell Brands to the Los Angeles-based private equity firm Seedler Equity Partners, which owns LA Fitness, with MLB a co-investor in the $395 million deal.
Yeah, so I don't know what, I mean, what Rawlings actually owned, because I don't know, I mean, obviously they make, their name is on mitts and on all kinds of stuff, right? Batting gloves and...
Yeah, the baseball is their main thing, but yeah, they have some mitts for sure and some batting gloves and maybe some other equipment. They might have some aluminum bats.
Well, what do you think the, like I said, the balls are all made by De Beers. They're made in a factory in Haiti. This is going back 20 years.
Yeah.
I mean, so what do you mean? If you went to the Sporting Goods show and you saw De Beers, their booth, man, it was unbelievable the amount of stuff that they made. The amount of baseballs are they're big soft ones that like girls play. Their 12-inch balls that you can play in a gym, so if they whack the window they won't break it.
Right.
There has to be, I don't know how many different colors of 12-inch softballs, not so much 16 but 12-inch. Some of those fields in Texas and in Pittsburgh, the lights must be like, you know, you might put a flashlight out there, because some of the balls are like iridescent.
Yeah.
And so there's a million different colors of these things. I bet they had 100 different kinds of balls out there that they're making. I mean, you wouldn't eat from, you know, kickballs to... There isn't anything they didn't make. And then the baseballs are just... What do you suppose the economics is of Rawlings holding the contract and saying, you guys make it for like 30 years? I mean, who makes what? How much do you think Rawlings makes just by having their name on it? I don't think they even had a factory.
That's a good question. I mean, I have no idea.
Yeah, I wonder what that contract would have been like. But you're right. I mean, I wonder, maybe they didn't make the... I don't know if they make the... I know they have a huge line of mitts, obviously.
Yeah, I used to have a Rawlings mitt.
Me too. I always thought they were really good.
Yeah.
They always fit my hand way better than Wilson ones for some reason. But they also have the batting gloves. Do they have bats? I don't think so.
See, I thought maybe they had aluminum bats or something, but I don't know.
Because the real high-end ones are what? What's the name of the brand, Italian name? Do something or other. The Martinis or whatever those things
yeah.
are. They're $350 a throw.
Yeah, they have some bats. Rawlings does.
Okay.
But
I wonder if they make anything.
I'm looking on their website. Yeah, I don't know if they outsource that too, but yeah, Rawlings aluminum. I remember seeing Rawlings aluminum bats growing up, and they claim to be the finest in the field.
Well, what are they going to do to start the season? You know, back to the other balls?
Well, I think it, I mean, for the longest time they acted like there was no issue with the ball, and now it's very clear that they made a conscious decision that they figured out what was wrong with the ball, and then two, they decided to fix it for the postseason is what we're hearing. So it was disingenuous of them the whole time to act like they didn't know what was going on and that maybe nothing was going on. So it's clear they knew exactly what was going on. They were able to fix it, and now I think going forward, in my opinion, it should be, you know, this version of the ball, the postseason version of the ball, and let's get baseball back to, you know, I like guys hitting home runs, don't get me wrong, and I think guys still will. If you're just taking 5 feet off, you're still going to see a ton of home runs, but you don't need the seventh hitter hitting an opposite field home run in the 10th row. You just don't need to see that.
No. And well, everything, you know, as we talk about in the show all the time, no man can do just one thing. I mean, everybody likes, you know, to say golf. Everybody likes to go out and hit the ball far. I mean, right? That's part of the reason why you're out there.
Yeah.
But the last thing you want, I mean, when I was younger, and I'm sure there were other guys, but one of my buddies really could hit the ball, and I hit the ball pretty good. You know, we'd go out to Hickory Hills or someplace, and we were probably him for sure, and me once in a while, we're the only two guys that could drive 16. And maybe 9 once in a while on a good day, which are par fours. You know, the last thing you want when your golf courses were built 80 years ago, most of them, is they have every swinging idiot out there hitting the ball 300 yards, spraying it all over other fairways, because the fairways in most public courses are very close to each other.
Oh, yeah.
And it gets very dangerous if guys that can't hit it. You know, I wasn't that good, but at least I could keep it somewhat straight. But the last thing you wanted is every guy out there drinking beers hitting the ball 280 everywhere they want to go. I mean, it became like a shooting gallery. Plus, these courses are not that long. I mean, what's the point of every single golf course in the country having an X 5 acres around it, just to, you know, you don't need it. There's a reason why, you know, a really big hitter used to hit the ball 280. Now he's hitting it 325. I mean, okay, there's a lot of par fours on some of these public courses that are 325. You don't want guys in a green getting bonked.
Right.
I mean, so I mean, there's a lot to be said for, you know, people hitting the ball further and having better equipment. It's quite another. I mean, imagine in football, or I was going to say in baseball, where the punter walks out and says, well, this is my ball. And all of a sudden he kicks it, the guy goes out of the stadium, you know, right? Well, I mean, what's the point of that? You know, I mean, so baseball sort of didn't we talk about the three or four guys that they paid to do research on the ball and they came back and said, yeah, it's way livelier, but they couldn't figure out why?
Yeah, that's what I remember hearing last season. And it seems to me they clearly knew why. To the point where they could reverse it.
But why all of a sudden fix it for the playoffs?
That's a good question. And, you know, from what I'm reading here, it sounds like they definitely did something.
Yeah. Well, say, switching sports, what the hell happened to San Francisco? How those guys go from the chumps of the league to 5-0 all of a sudden? I mean, they look great.
They looked unbelievable yesterday on the road against, you know, on paper at least, a really good Rams team. Well, you know, I think that they accumulated a lot of high draft picks on both sides of the ball. You know, they have the stud tight end now. They have good defensive and offensive lines. They seem to have a lot of pieces on defense. And then 2 years ago, they made the big move and traded, you know, a couple first-round picks or whatever it was for Jimmy Garoppolo and then signed him to a $100-plus million extension. And in that first, you know, handful of games with San Francisco, they were great. I think he went, like, 4-0. They started out, like, 1-9, and then they brought in Garoppolo, and he went, like, 5-0 or something. So everyone was really jacked up for them heading up into last season. Well, then last season is either the first game or the second game. He tore his ACL and he's out for the year. So they had another bad season, got another high draft pick, and now he's back and he looks healthy and great, and they're just loaded. And they have a lot of good, really young players, and then you throw in a real quarterback, and they seem to be the real deal.
So the Bears had to put Kyle Long in IR. Did I hear that on the radio?
Yeah, and his Bear career might be over.
What's the injury? Did he have a? Yeah, what do you have? He had a hip or something. So he's out. That's not good. I mean, he's still. I don't know that. Whenever you have injuries, it sure seems like you start hurting other stuff because you favored a thing that was hurt in the first place. But it always used to happen to me. I know, but
yeah, no, he was clearly banged up, and you know, he tried to play through it, and he was not good. And, you know, sometimes you can, when you're younger, maybe you can play through some injuries and still perform at a high level. He's obviously getting up there in football age, and could not do anything.
You know, he shouldn't be in terms of age, because he only played like 1 year in college, didn't he, or two?
Yeah, something. He played like one junior college year and then one or two,
you know,
high level.
He played baseball? I thought he did or something.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think he played baseball.
Well, I mean, the dude can't be. Is he even 30?
I'll have to look up how old he is.
So now the other guy's still out too, though, right? Larson, the other guard?
Yeah, and the offensive line for the Bears has been, in my opinion, the biggest problem so far this year.
And it was the biggest plus last year.
Yeah, it's been horrible. Kyle Long is 30. He turns 31 in December.
So when is his contract over?
I think this is the last year.
Well, that's weird. I mean, what kind of a hip injury is it?
It just says a lingering hip issue.
Whatever it had to do with when he had the foot problems, probably. Well, it's a shame.
Yeah, it makes you wonder if some of the other stuff led to it. But, yeah, he was the 20th overall pick in 2013, which was a shock because no one really had him that high on draft boards. But it turned out to be a very good selection. He was named a Pro Bowler after each of his first three seasons. And then he was an alternate at right tackle in 2015. So very good start to his career. And then, you know, then the injuries really started to pile up. And at the last three seasons, he's been
there were injuries. Well, there were injuries that had nothing to do with him being, well, I won't call any of those guys fragile, but the guy behind him came down on his leg and just crunched it from behind around the ankle.
Yeah, that's just stuff that happens to offensive line. There's nothing you can do about that. It's bad luck.
Yeah, and I always thought he was, for the last 4 years, really, he's probably been their best player. Anyway, S&P futures, we're still down. All kinds of other news. We'll talk about Mr. Flanagan. S&P futures or down 10. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 8. We were up 7 last night at one point, maybe even a little more than that. We've got NASDAQ futures down 26. We've got the Dow is up down 83. Over in Europe, we've got the Brexit deal is escaping here as well. A lot of deals seem to be going sour here this morning. The story on the Chinese deal is now the Chinese people want more talks before they sign this deal. Not sure why, but it says... The headline is, hold the champagne. Champagne should probably be kept on ice at least until the two presidents put pen to paper, said state-owned media China Daily. So whether this is a truce, it's a stage one of the deal, whether it's all going to fall apart right now is all up in the air, unfortunately. Dax on down 76.6%, FTSE down 42.6%, CAC down 44.8%, so slightly more. Over in Asia, we've got the, these guys were actually up, I believe. We've got the, Nikkei was up 248, 1.1%, because they were obviously, we're not celebrating the Friday celebration, where everybody else was. Nikkei up, or Shanghai up 34, 1.1%, Hang Seng up 213, 0.8%. We've got in the bonds, we've got the 10-year 1.73, so creeping back up. This is the lowest negative we've seen, the Bund, minus 0.47. So this stuff's all creeping. Japan, 0.18, so they actually are within, well, I won't say within shouting distance of even, but these long-term rates are all moving up here. So whether it's inflationary expectations, whatever it is, you know, I don't know. But clearly the Fed, looking at long-term rates starting to creep up here, needs to be looking at that. I'm sure they are, in terms of whether to lower short-term rates at their next meeting. Oil down 114, 53, 56. Brent down 116, 59, 35. Natural gas, 230. RBOB gas, 161. Gold bouncing back up 12 bucks, back up to 1570 cents. Silver up 9 cents, 1764. Copper still cannot get out of its own way, 260. So if you're looking for that, to tell you that China is off to the races again, that's not telling you that. Matty, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have one major issue in the area. That's I-57 southbound between 127th and Sibley is closed. There was an overnight fatal car versus pedestrian situation that happened 2:30 this morning, and that investigation is still taking place. So that I-57 will be closed until further notice, hopefully reopened here soon before the morning rush really begins. But that's an issue that's been going on all night. The rest of your Southside Expressways, Dan Ryan, Bishop Ford, Stevenson, all looking okay. Eisenhower, traffic starting to build, but no accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Suburban tollways are all quiet, so we're off to a pretty good start on a Monday morning outside of I-57. Weather today, partly cloudy, cold temperatures, similar to the weekend, lots of sunshine, a high of 54. Right now it is clear and 40 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 89 today. Right now it's clear and 64. In sports, Bears were off, of course, on a bye week, and it was announced, as we talked about in the last segment, that Kyle Long will be placed on IR with a hip issue, meaning that he has likely probably played his last game as a Bear. Long, a very good offensive lineman for the last six or seven seasons, but his career as a Bear is likely to come to an end. Cardinals held on to beat the Falcons 34-33. Cardinals led by 17 in that one down in Arizona. Falcons storm back, but the Cardinals hang on to win by one. Sunday Night Football last night, it was the Steelers over the Chargers 24-17. And in the ALCS, the series is now tied at one game apiece as Houston beat the Yankees 3-2 in 11 innings. Chief.
Yeah, John, how are you?
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
I'm doing all right, except I shipped you and Mr. Weber an article I wanted to talk about this morning, and of course I forgot to put the article in the thing, so I can't exactly say that you guys have read it, but so I will...
You've been hanging around me too long, Tom.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, talk about going brain dead, but anyway, I've been kind of, you know, I've been sort of interested, John, as we've talked, I mean... I mean, John's a wordsmith sort of guy. He's an English professor, lawyer, knows the language way better than I do. And you get this kind of weird feeling when we're talking about this call with the Ukraine, you know, constantly, there's talking about there's a transcript, there's all these words being kicked around. And I remember telling myself one day in the car, these two guys are arguing, a Republican and a Democrat. You know, we read the transcript, read this, we need the. I'm going, why doesn't somebody just listen to the tape? And I evidently, I don't know, Jen, this is an article by now. Of course, Kevin will probably call in and say it's fake news, but and I don't know who the hell the guy. It's a who the hell's wrote the damn thing? I can't even. Anyway, it's on the CNBC site. It's an AP thing. I'm sure there's a guy in here someplace. They start talking about there is no tape,
right?
I've heard. I didn't know.
I don't
know
how internal communications work or have worked in previous White Houses. probably tapes got a bad name, you know, starting with Nixon.
Funny but, you should say that.
but I, from what I have gathered, the call exists only in a transcription that is made by a, you know, stenographer listening to it like a court reporter.
Right.
Putting it down in print, and then, you know, there's always, you know, it's the only record you have, but there's always, you know, nitpicking to be done about whether this is a correct reflection, you know, of what was said. It doesn't give you the tone of voice, it doesn't give you silences, or, you know, it doesn't give you anything else that might help you sort of fill in the blanks about what the call was really like. So that's going to be the subject of endless battling too, you know, and how much can you expose about the internal communications of the White House? And I think then you're up against some really tough security issues that you don't want everybody knowing how this kind of business is conducted or who it's vested in or who's got custody over it or where it goes from point A to point B in the White House. So that's disturbing that it's going to turn into that kind of a discussion before we're through, I think.
Well, I just know, I mean, maybe you and I have been, like Remini say, edumacated enough to where when they don't use a certain term, you keep listening for, like, tape.
Right.
There mustn't be one. Well, they were interviewing this guy, Pfeiffer, who evidently worked in the he managed the Situation Room during the Obama years. He said when he walked in there, he asked the people, you know, he was just a young dude. He says, when I walked in, I said, why don't we just record the call and write a transcript based on that? And he said that his predecessor told him that the White House stopped taping presidential calls in the 1970s when President Tricky Dick recorded 37 hours of conversation, transcripts of which were used by Watergate investigators to boot his ass out. So they have not taped a call since the 70s.
That would make sense.
Well, to who?
Well, I mean, just to any White House that's trying to protect itself.
Well, yeah, I get it, but here's the deal. I mean, I don't know if you knew this. You probably did, and you're just refusing to say that you know more than I do on this, because I read this thing, and I am absolutely stunned. That's the beauty of it, Jan. You get on the air every day, and you're supposed to be this expert on everything. I'm reading this thing. I'm going, so here's what happened. There was all these people that are, quote, on the call, like Pompeo and all these other dudes, but down in the Situation Room, There are two guys. Well, I think they're guys. One, everything Trump says, the guy repeats into a machine, and the machine uses voice recognition. He doesn't even tape it down, or type it down like a quote reporter, like you're mentioning. That he speaks over it. So if you say one, he says one, and it goes fast. And then there's a voice recognition thing, like you're announcing a baseball game, that prints it out. And there's another guy who says everything that the guy on the other side of the phone says, like Erdogan. It wasn't Erdogan on this call, but it was, what's the guy's name? It was this knucklehead from Ukraine.
The
guy who was a former comedian.
Oh, yeah, Zelensky.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a guy who speaks over everything he says, and it goes into this translation machine. And then a piece of paper, a document, comes out of the translation machine that now gets edited. So I'm just sitting here going, why are these people in Congress fighting back and forth over this transcript? Why don't they just listen to the tape? Well, there is no tape.
Right. And, you know, the big problem I see in all of this, I mentioned this a little last week, too, that if you can't conduct business of this scale with a foreign leader with any expectation of some privacy or security, that any, you know, things that are said in error or things that are said with, you know, with bad information or whatever aren't going to stir up a hornet's nest in either country or a ton of other countries when word leaks out. And I just think of so many times in history that we know of where had there been any kind of expectation that a president's private conversations with any other world leader would have been public information, we'd have a world that's absolutely unrecognizable, and it wouldn't be a world we'd want to live in probably either, because it would be chaotic. So there has to be some kind of way of keeping a lid on this stuff when conversations are this sensitive.
Keeping a lid on it sounds like you're anxious for the medical or the recreational marijuana.
Yeah, we'd be horrified if we heard exactly what went into this debate.
That's right. Well, I mean, but then it comes down, like you say, I think the issue is, Jen, and I don't know the issue. I think that if the dude came to Washington and it was a big deal, I think what you do is, you know, this is my South Side, or I used to see other presidents do this. You'd go for a walk in a Rose Garden, or you'd go to Camp David, or you go to someplace. But when you have an official call like this, it's an official call. I mean, it's like an official meeting of I was going to say Ram. What's Lori Lightfoot in a committee? I mean, once you do that, it's a public thing, or at least, I mean, it's something where deals are going to be made. It's not like you're walking through the Rose Garden and say, well, what if we did something like this? And what would you guys' reaction to be? I mean, that's why you have all these, you know, when you go to the big, you know, we're going to talk with Putin or something, that all the real conversations are off on the side.
Right.
I mean, what it says here, I don't read the whole thing here, that he wouldn't, he hates that, okay, I'll put it, no one on our team ever prepared a call package prompting Obama to ask for a personal favor to help him win an election. So in other words, all these other guys would have a face-to-face meeting with the president before he made a call like this. Okay, and it said that they would have one individual with first-hand knowledge of how the Trump calls with foreign leaders are handled. So the president hates pre-briefs and has frequently refused to do them. Trump doesn't like written background materials either, preferring to handle the calls himself, often in the morning from his residence, when people aren't even there. Occasionally, while on the phone with foreign heads of state, he's handed the receiver to his daughter so she can talk to the leader. But evidently, they used to have, the person said a 6-page brief with attachments was once prepared for Trump before a call to a foreign leader. That turned out to be too long, as did a single-page version. Preparing pre-brief note cards that offered about 3 talking points for Trump to make on the call were the norm, according to the person who feared retribution for describing this process. But, I mean, you can't, I don't know, I think that these things are, once you get on a meeting, a state meeting where everybody's talking, listening on both sides, I don't know that that's the venue to go off. You know, I mean, if you're gonna ask, if Biden is a real pain in the ass, you know, over there and stuff, if you're gonna ask him that, you have him in you walk in the rows. I mean, there's no respect for the protocol. Even if you're that way, it's like you're being a lousy crook instead of being in addition to being a crook.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you give a president a prompt book like that, you know, here's an outline of where we want to go with this call. From what I know of the transcript, and I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not sure what I'm saying is true, but I believe that Zelensky is the one who brought up Biden at all. I mean, this is not something that Trump made the call seeking to talk about. It was a congratulatory call, and that's pretty much, I think, how Trump saw his reason for contacting him in the first place. When the conversation detoured around to something that, you know, I don't know if Trump, I'm sure Trump had, you know, lots of opinions on this issue,
right,
but he was not using the call as an opportunity to introduce the subject. When it got introduced, I think Trump's comment was perfectly legitimate. You know,
well, according to this,
assistance in figuring out what happened here.
According to this guy, and I don't know. Now I'm worried about, you know, Kevin keeps telling me to read the transcript. Now I'm not so sure the transcript. So on the call, Trump was first to speak. He showered the 41-year-old Ukrainian, a novice politician and former comedian, with praise following his party's victory in parliament elections. Zelensky chatted about how he wanted to drain the swamp in Kyiv. Is that how you pronounce that? K-Y-I-V?
Yeah, it's the new spelling of Kiev, I believe.
Okay. And how he wished the European Union would provide more financial support. He told Trump the Ukraine was ready to buy more Javelin anti-tank missiles from the United States. And it says here, the next 10 words came out of Trump's mouth. I would like you to do us a favor, though. And that's what triggered the House impeachment inquiry. So evidently, according to this, Trump did bring it up. And, according to this thing. Again, who the hell knows? I mean, but I'm just saying, I'm reading this for the first time now. I'm sure there's another article someplace that would maybe be different. But my point is I don't get, this is Trump asked Zelensky to work with Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, and Attorney General William Barr to look into Biden and his son, who served on the board of a Ukrainian gas company. And but the interesting part is, or one of the interesting parts, here's the one talking point. Individuals familiar with the Trump White House procedure say one Situation Room staffer using voice-to-text software repeats each word the president says, another listens and repeats what the foreign leader says. The software turns the words they repeat into text in a rough draft of the telecon is produced. Now, the whistleblower, what he said, according to this thing again, the identified whistleblower, one of the two have come forward, said White House lawyers directed that the telecon be taken off a computer server where classified documents on foreign leader calls are normally kept. They directed it be transferred to a computer network with restricted access for documents about covert operations or other highly sensitive information. So the whistleblower's point is, once the White House attorneys read the text, or whatever, read whatever was brought down there, they sort of knew they had a problem and put it somewhere else. And that was one of the things that the whistleblowers came up with, is it went to a different spot than it normally does because they were trying to cover up the Biden thing. Now, again,
well, if you put that in the context, and that may very well be, you know, that doesn't, you know, reflect well, you know, on the whole narrative that's being spun out here. But, you know, if you put it into the context of there having been a letter, I think it was June of 2018, that, you know, three U.S. senators, Durbin, Leahy, and Menendez, addressed to the Ukrainian prosecutor in writing, so there's no ambiguity here about what was said, in effect putting a pretty heavy hand on Ukrainian officials to cooperate with the Robert Mueller investigation into Trump's use of, you know, foreign assistance in twisting the 2016 election. So if that's what Trump is up against, where he's got, you know, U.S. senators, you know, trying to get the help of a foreign government in assisting in an investigation of Trump, I don't think Trump is out of line at all in what he said to Zelensky.
Well, this is, I know that you're not necessarily one that wants to go down this road. Maybe the road is taking you there, but I for one, John, I mean, I'm politically in the middle. I'm absolutely convinced that this concept of relative guilt, our mothers wouldn't have put up with it. No society should put up with it. The other guy's guilty, therefore I get to do this. I don't know where that takes us as a society. I honestly don't. I mean, somewhere along the line, what I would like to have happen, and this, in my mind, you know, I don't know what exactly his talents are, but we need somebody to stand up someplace. And I don't know, it's not the Supreme Court's job, or somebody who has some sort of has to say, look, I've been listening to this crap now for 2 years. We've seen Manafort go to jail for crap that went on in the Ukraine. Flynn, is he in jail? Whatever happened to him? I forget what happened to him, but he's someplace, right? And now we've got Biden's kid, obviously, with the finger in the pie over there. Here's what I want. I want you pick three people from your side of the aisle. We're picking three people from the other side of the aisle. And we're going to have Justice Roberts, and if you can even do this, we're going to have a seven-man or lady thing, and we're going to say, we're going to investigate the Ukraine, and we're going to pull three or four other names out of the hat, and we're going to follow all the U.S. money we sent to these places, and we're going to find the 25 sleazeballs on both sides that are stealing all the money before it even gets to the people on the ground. And Jan, the message to this whole mess is, especially since we don't have tapes, we can fight about this phone call forever and we're getting nowhere. The point is, what exactly did Biden's kid have to sell to these people for however much he's making on his board? What did Manafort find over there? How much of our money went to the other idiot's palace? You know, the guy, right. The two guys. Well, I want to know before I put my name on another piece of paper that sends money to them or anybody else. I mean, how many of our guys got our finger in the pie and this money never gets where we think it's going? You know what, Jim?
Well,
we need that.
I just saw over the weekend, and I don't know who, you know, dug it out of the NBC archives, but it was a Tom Brokaw interview of Joe Biden in 2008 when he was running for vice president the first time with Obama. And it's a tough interview, you know, and it takes Hunter Biden to task for exactly the same things we're hearing about now. You know, nothing was different with the Bidens in 2008 from what it is in 2019. This is, I think, it's an old story, but it's old only in the sense that, you know, nobody picked up on it, nobody pushed it. It didn't really make any difference in the 2008 or 2012 elections. It wasn't really talked about. So I agree with you completely that, you know, there's got to be a reckoning, and, you know, you don't rely on, you know, kind of idiotic side arguments, you know, that this is okay because so-and-so got away with it already. But the fact that they got away with it and had, you know, so much protection in getting away with it in the media and with other politicians who were probably benefiting from it too, this goes back so long that anybody who's going to attack it now is going to just, you know, be seen as somebody who's back in the same tennis match back and forth. I did it first, you did it first, whatever. And we're not any closer to the solution, but it's so entrenched. And from before Trump was inaugurated, it was entrenched.
Oh, sure.
And so what's Trump able to do other than, you know, fight back? Which,
well,
you know,
the people that he has around him have a whole history of stealing money wherever they can. I mean, right? As do a lot of these people. See, I don't know, John. I have an interesting view of this because coming from Chicago, and the interesting part, the trading floor was to me very honest because everybody was watching everybody. That's the whole purpose of open outcry, right? But every time there was a side piece to the industry, there was a side sleazy piece, the same people would recognize that it's not exactly right, but people are getting away with it. Like when Bernie Madoff essentially invented payment for order flow, which to me is a bigger sin than what he did to those people later. He invented payment for order flow. Well, there's people like me that say, wait a minute, that's wrong. I'm not going to do that. And we put PTI together. We never took payment for order flow. Not that we didn't get some once in a while because people were just handing it out indiscriminately, but we never directed a trade. We never knew who was paying more or whatever and directed a trade that way. Now, we could have done a lot better if we'd have figured out who was paying the most and sent them to trade, but that would have harmed our customers. I mean, but there are people who, you know, the personalities of people, and their ears perk up. Immediately they hear of something that somebody's doing in the gray area and how much money they're making, and they dive in. So, I mean, there's no question in my mind, again, that given the people that Trump surrounds himself with, if his kids heard for a second how much Homer Biden was making in Ukraine, instead of trying to indict Homer Biden, they're going to say, "Where's my peace, Hunter Biden? I mean, where's my peace?" Right? I mean, it's like,
well, and it's not just Biden.
No, right. There's a million people.
Everybody,
right.
Probably in the U.S. Senate.
But it's like
stories. You know?
It's like in Chicago, when we got all these white aldermen. Okay, we're going to have a few black aldermen in the black areas. Okay, we put a black alderman there. It's not like the guy's coming in as Solomon. He's coming in and stealing what the white guy was doing. And the white guy puts his daughter in there. When he leaves, the black guy puts his daughter. I mean, it's not like we're talking about reform here. I mean, are we? It's not like you're going to find Jared Kushner sitting up on a stage. God, I look at this Ukrainian situation, and here's 48 people stealing our money. We got to stop this. He's going, how do I make it 49? Right?
Well, you know, in a court of equity, you know, like a chancery over,
yeah,
you know, the Daily Center, there's a concept of clean hands, you know, and this doesn't really work in a criminal setting, which is kind of what we're into here with impeachment, or, you know, potentially criminal. But with clean hands, you can't come to the table and ask for relief from a judge if you've done the same dirty stuff.
Well, you can if you're big enough.
Your neighbor, or blasting music, or putting up a fence where it shouldn't be, or whatever, you know. And the court's going to look at it and say, well, you can't ask for somebody to do here what you've been doing for, you know, apparently X number of years and got away with. So, that's kind of the way I look at this. I don't have any respect for people like Schiff and Pelosi who come screaming and yelling to the table about Trump, and you look at their past, and I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole.
Well, they
don't go very far in my book as having any credibility here as being, you know, guardians of anything but their own pocketbook.
Well, you can't. I mean, I understand that, Jan, but I also, again, I know your politics may be slightly different from mine, but someplace, somewhere, it's got to end. Mr. Flanagan, you were going 80 miles an hour on a 55. Don't tell me about Matty Weber. Don't tell me about Kevin. Don't tell me about... You're going 80. Somewhere it's got to end. Now, if it ends with Manafort and Hunter Biden both going to jail, fine. I don't care. But somewhere it's got to end. I mean, I don't know where you start. Somebody's got to say, I don't care. Tomorrow, we're going 55, not 80. I mean, I don't know if this is where you start, but SP Futures down 5.25, and NASDAQ Futures down 14. Be right back.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here.
something happening here.
Well, North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. This is Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. John Flanagan with us. S&P futures down 550. They've come back some. Around 12 we came in. They were up 8 or 9 last night. S&P futures down 1550. The main news this morning is that the Chinese are not as gung-ho about the agreement as we were publishing on Friday. They want more talks before they would agree to sign it. And, I don't know, looks more like a truce more now than it does a stage one of an agreement, but hopefully it's more than that. John, I want to just, the reason why I'm kind of giving you grief about this and a little bit is I don't know how you stop. I made the kind of half-assed remark last week that if I could find a whistleblower and of course you didn't have phones on or cameras on your phones in those days, but if I could find an old Polaroid. Actually, I was just talking to somebody the other night. Somebody you would have loved to have talked to. It was a Friday night where the guy knew somebody that had discovered, he collected old cameras that had unpublished pictures in there and developed all the pictures and did some kind of a couple of books of life in America at the time and how the pictures are absolutely spectacular or something. And he made a lot of money. I mean, deserved a lot of money, probably, for having that idea, all that work. But what if one of those pictures would have shown, George McGovern and Hubert Humphrey looking in the classifieds because it was the winner at the time for second-story burglars at the time of the Watergate? I mean, does that mean that Nixon was now not guilty? Or I mean, I don't know. We had one of my guys who writes in all the time was pissed off at CNBC the other day, which is easy to be pissed off at. They're talking about this is the eighth time that we are, essentially allies of us have basically screwed the Kurds or gone back on word with them. I mean, everybody screws the Kurds. It's like one of those things. And he was irate that it was all on Trump that MSNBC didn't mention the other seven times because there were a few Democratic presidents in there too. So now all of a sudden there's this obligation on the part of the media to diminish somebody's ignorant decision by mentioning ignorant decision. I mean, how do we ever break out of that? I mean, I there's very few people that I respect in this world mentally more than you and Kevin. And I keep talking about him, arguing because he's here and he can defend himself. But the point is, if Nancy Pelosi has a problem, I want to prosecute her there too. I don't want to confuse the two. If Trump did something wrong here, or is making dumb decisions, or is not qualified for the job, or doesn't prepare before phone calls, and has a call with Erdogan and decides to pull people out of there, and then 24 hours later, people are getting shot. I mean, if it's a problem, it's really on him, Kevin. And if I didn't like, Jen and both from Notre Dame, what's the difference, Kevin? Jen, I don't know what I can do about, Hillary Clinton and something. I've had conversations with people. Well, what about Hillary? What about Hillary? I would have voted for Hillary if she was the last person literally on Earth after she stole the money in her accounts, because you know how important I make my own trades in my account. And nobody else's trades gets in there, good or bad. And so she allowed somebody to put good ones in there as a way to pay her off. Kevin, John, I wouldn't vote for her no matter what. So to bring up to me, well, what about Hillary? I know she's a crook. She's not here. She's not on trial. It's not her day. Well, I don't care if she has her day. That's great, too. But how do we break out of this? What about the other guy? I mean, how do we get there?
Well, and I don't know how surmountable this obstacle has become, but it's become clear to me that so many of the agencies that, the drafters of the Constitution had in mind to protect a government gone crazy from itself are really compromised now. So we have the whole question of security.
When you say agencies
over the telephone that I talked about before, but you look at the judiciary, which is supposed to be an independent body, and the whole concept of judicial review that's evolved, of how the executive is checked or the legislative bodies are checked, that's been completely compromised too. So that you've got these carnival courts in California calling the shots on anything Trump does, and they can find some judge in the Ninth Circuit to go against it. And it'll work its way up to the Supreme Court. We know how politicized that body has become. So there's, with the Obama appointees to the federal bench, and then you've got Trump trying to counteract that to get some semblance of fairness or balance, which is really what you want a judicial body to be, is balanced or at least fair. And I don't think there's any way of saying that the system now is fair. Then how do you disassemble that other than by stacking it the next time you get a chance with people who you think are going to give you a fair shot when you need your day in court? Then you look at the intelligence operations, which, you know, you might not have trusted, you know, Alan Dulles, you know, with your wallet or your purse in the same room, but he had the appearance of being balanced, and as the CIA did. It was not there primarily as a political agency that was doing the bidding of whoever appointed person A, B, and C to it. And then you've got, you know, the FBI and with Strzok and Page and these absolute clowns that, you know, have erased any sense of balance or fairness in even the federal investigative bodies. Then you look at the press. You go down the line. If I were in Trump's shoes, and, you know, I don't know how the guy gets up every morning and does his job. He does it, I think, as well as can be expected for somebody who's got everybody and his, you know, Hunter Biden-like son involved telling him what a complete idiot he is. And this is not how you want any country to function as a supposed democracy. But to get back to the balance that you and I both want, you know, just some fairness so that the crooks don't get the upper hand over and over again.
I think they're there.
I don't know how you start to disassemble this so-called edifice we have when it's been completely co-opted and corrupted, so that there's no way that you really get your day in court and expect a fair treatment. So it starts at the bottom and it's going right to the top, and it's going to be an ugly process of taking the long view, saying, what in the world have we created here? This is not at all what we ever wanted. Nobody would want it, but this is what we've inherited, and that's kind of what Trump has inherited. And God love him for doing the job he does. I think he's doing a pretty good job given what he's up against.
Well, I would sort of take the, you know, kind of the other side to that, in the sense that, in my mind, because of the vagaries of TV and because the Washington has obviously become disenfranchised, and I think Obama was elected because he was from the outside and people thought he didn't have time to be co-opted. It turns out he was co-opted. Then you went to somebody even more radical. I mean, I think the Trump phenomenon is a total follow-on of the Obama phenomenon.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree. And look at how Obama has behaved vis-a-vis his good buddy, his running mate, Joe Biden.
Yeah,
does he even know does he pick up a newspaper and see what's being said about Biden? I don't see any leaping to the defense of the family here or signing on to it.
But this
just confirms my belief that if you can't do anything for Obama, Obama has no interest in you.
This is worldwide. When we were doing stuff, and I've mentioned before, we, PTI, we didn't do it, but some people who were affiliated with PTI also had a business where they did cash grains to China. Well, you had to pay somebody off who was inevitably the son of one of the schlumps that run the place. I mean, with this kind of money flying around, I mean, why do you think these staffers never leave? Why do you think that there are staffers who get paid by, from what I understand, get paid by firms outside that are sleazy firms of all what's going on these bills so they can trade ahead of it? There's people who sell that information.
Sure.
I mean, this is, but then you have a guy, I mean, I really thought that somebody from the outside, even though I could not stand this man ever, because I've talked to people personally that have done work for the guy, he never paid him, told him to sue him, you know, that kind of crap. And the idea where you declare bankruptcy of the plate, screw your partners, and you end up stronger and your partners, that kind of stuff, I could never do. So I think of him like I do of Hillary in terms of individual, ethics. I mean, there are none. I mean, the man's totally immoral in my mind. But so okay, but he gets in there. He gets in there because he's on the apprentice and everything. And now it's one thing. I would say that if you and I were in the press, we'd try and be fair. But if every single day the guy calls us the enemies of the state, I for one, being from I'm from the South Side, I couldn't wait to find something that the guy did dirty so I couldn't tell somebody about it. After the guy sits there every day and insults me, I mean, he's not exactly Dale Carnegie, for God's sake. Right?
Well, but, you know, this is really the source of Trump's appeal. And
to who?
I don't like his style. I never watched The Apprentice. I never had any interest, really, in Trump's empire building in New York. I was aware of it, but the saga of his marriages and his families, all that stuff, I just tuned out because it's not my story. It's not my style at all. But I'm reminded of something I read this weekend, and I can't remember whose, label this is, but, Trump is the only Trump we've got. And the people who are behind him see him as the only holdout in all of this. This is maybe the cockeyed world that we live in. But they look at the clown car of the Democrats running for president, Medicare for all, free college tuition. That doesn't resonate with, the people I know from my South Side roots, too. Who's going to pay for that? I am.
Well,
I don't want that.
It doesn't resonate. And I would say that my critique of that side is that that they don't, they're too young, most of them. Elizabeth Warren's not, and neither is Biden, but Bernie Sanders certainly isn't. But I'm saying the other people, they see some stuff that's like really, really wrong, John. And they don't know how to deal with it, okay? They see the student debt getting to some spot. They see an education in Notre Dame being $70,000 when we were there, it was $3,500, right? Now, if you put that in a CPI calculator, it should be like 19, not 70.
Right.
So they look and say, who's getting all that money? Where's it all going? And it's really not going to very many spots. It's going to a relatively few number of people. So,
and even, how it's been skewed so that your student loans aren't dischargeable in bankruptcy.
Right.
I mean, it's a creditor. I mean, what's the distinction here,
right,
other than to beef up, the academic engine that just can charge whatever it wants? And it is something you and I didn't face when we were going to college. It's horrendous.
Well, I mean, you reach the point where I don't know, Jenny, how long you've listened to the show, but if there's no growth or 1% growth, or you can lie and say there's 2% growth because there isn't. As you probably know, I'm not an economist to tell you, what the GDP is going to be next year. I'm not that kind. I'm more of a behavioral economist. And how people's, when you have an attitude, when you and I were utes, and I think our parents, if the guy down the block got a 5% raise and your dad got a 4% raise, he was more than likely to say, I think the guy down the block maybe worked a little harder than I did, or his company's doing a little better. I'll use the term, you didn't really bitch the guy out because he was,
right,
because everybody was sort of growing together. But now people have the feeling, and you know what, John, they're not wrong. When you start growing 1% or 9%, and all of a sudden somebody gets a big raise, it's probably because somebody else didn't get one that maybe deserved a little something.
Sure.
Right? So you start to get this society where people start pointing fingers. Now, how exactly, say Commonwealth Edison, they went from $45 a month to $50 a month or something, whatever the last increase was. Now, did the top 500 people at Commonwealth Edison, top 100 people, are they being paid market rates or are they being paid more than market rates? And I'm going to say from an investment point of view, the people that are also getting screwed, how much of that increase would have gone straight to profit normally? How much of that made it down to dividends for shareholders? I'm going to say not very much. There's this management class somehow that now is they didn't invent electricity, right? They just
monopolized its delivery,
right? But they're all of a sudden. But now
you talked about that on your show, and then you and I think see eye to eye on that. It's the lack of competitiveness,
right?
It's enshrined now in the system. So
then the IOCs of the world come out and they say, here's you know, 80 people, none of them seem to be Edison to me, right? They didn't invent anything. They're not even Rockefeller that was, you know, a genius in his own way, or Carnegie, where he put his own money on the line. All these people got all this dough. They didn't even invest anything anywhere. And all of a sudden, by the way, this guy's got $90 billion. It looks to me like it was the U.S. was their patent to start with, and the guy stole it. I mean, people look at this and they go, I don't care how they got it. I want to take it from them, which isn't right, by the way. It absolutely isn't right. But it gets to the point where they don't even care. I mean, they look at somebody with a lot of money and they say he must have stole it somehow. I mean,
well, and I really do think this is the way I see it as well, too. People feel shut out. You know, the system has been carved out around them so that they don't share in what they used to think was a meritocracy of some kind. And there's tremendous resentment that's built up, and hence you get somebody like Trump. So it's not at all unforeseen. He happened to be somebody who really did have, call it what you want, but it had some star appeal.
Yeah.
People had no trouble getting on board with, and even a lot of former Democrats got on board with, too, who became completely disenchanted with Obama.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Who voted for Obama and said, where was my mind when I did that? And this is where, you know, Trump is the beneficiary of a system that has gotten so skewed that, you know, Hillary can get up and call people who like Trump deplorables. Well, that right away lost her the election, as far as I was concerned, when you start beating up on the people that the Clintons have been
beating up on all those years.
You know?
But I would say, John, I don't want to call anybody a deplorable, but one of the people, kind of close, I want to say who, there's a guy, not anybody we know from school, one of my son, and even though I could go there too, but we start talking about politics and he gives me I'm conservative. And I go, okay. He goes, no, I'm seriously, I'm conservative. And I said, well, what does that mean? Or do we have a secret handshake here I'm supposed to come up with? And I said, so you're a Trump guy? Oh, yeah. I said, well, I got to ask you, what do you like about him? Well, what do you mean? What's not to like? He hates Muslims. He hates Mexicans. He hates blacks. He hates liberals. And he lowered my taxes. And I said, well, that's 4 hates out of 5. He goes, yeah, well, what's the problem with that? I'm like, okay. I'm not going to say deplorable, but let's just put it this way. I'm going to shake my head silently. I guess there's people like that still around, and somebody appeals to them. But my concern, John, is that somewhere people will say that the job makes the man. I'll try and say this diplomatically, which I said before. The skill set now to get the job is not necessarily what neither you or I want in the job. And when you have people that maybe have lack of character, but also maybe have lack of knowledge, making these calls and pulling us out of places. I mean, I have never heard in all the years I listened to Meet the Press and stuff yesterday, a succession of Democrats and Republicans say this move in Syria is the dumbest move we've ever made. And how many people are going to die because of this? And at the end of the day, it's an incursion from Russia that lets the ISIS, where the man declared victory, and now they're all being let out of jail. I mean,
to me, it's Trump's a prophecy about what happens when we go in without a clearly defined mission, and under what conditions were we ever going to leave Syria when we first went in there? That was never clear. You know, it's a civil war. Turkey has a refugee issue that it's attempting to resolve, to resettle people. You've got Assad, you know, of a chaotic country. You got the Russians. You got all these surrounding countries are watching this. It's proxy war after proxy war, and it was never going to end well. Once we decided to go in, there is no way it could ever be a neat, clean, you know, happy ending kind of event. So we're reaping it, I think, now, better now than waiting 5 years to decide how many more thousands of troops is it going to take to get the resolution we kind of would like to see here, but we never had any clue what it was going to be anyway. So better we get out now. I know that the Kurds are being portrayed as you know, the reason we're there, which is not the reason we're there. And you know, I don't think anybody would have said, well, we want to send troops in to form a Kurdish independent country.
But they've done our proxy fighting
boundaries.
For it.
That was never on the table.
No, but it's our proxy for the. When you look at, I mean, it started with you know, Colin Powell telling Bush, you break it, you own it.
Right.
In Iraq.
And, you know, we've owned it then, you know, for quite a long time. And, you know, whether another 5,000 troops or angering Turkey enough, which we need as a NATO ally, you know, some kind of a buffer.
I think we've lost them. This guy, I think, is so far over the top. He could be the next Hitler.
Well, and he's got issues.
Yeah.
Kind of like Trump's in a way. I mean, he's got a fractured, you know, polyglot nation.
Well, he's
is a microcosm of, you know, religious and ethnic and, you know, refugee strife, you know, like a lot of other countries.
Yeah.
He's trying to hold the whole bag together there, doing what he can.
But he's a megalomaniac, which you mean
right, and that too. You know, yeah. and maybe that's what it takes to run some of these countries is a megalomaniac.
Well, when you say run, you know, keep your thumb on him, like
keep a lid on it.
Keep a lid on it.
Keep it from just centrifugally spinning out of control.
Right.
And becoming like Syria. Look, Syria is an example of what.
Well, but Syria is. I think Syria is a direct result of the Iraq situation.
Right. Which was ill-advised from day one.
Yeah.
You know? The pretext for it was a joke. And, you know, this is now what, you know, going on 20 years.
Yeah.
We have come no farther along in whatever objective anybody might have dreamed
of. But Petraeus, I don't know if you listened to Petraeus yesterday. He didn't criticize Trump directly, but when they said, well, how could this happen? He goes, you know, the only problem you have in wartime is you can't just do something on your own. Your enemy has a vote. If you do something, they just do something you don't like. I mean, once you're there, you pulling out. I mean, I've read the two stupidest foreign policy decisions ever made in the U.S. was to invade Iraq and then to pull out.
Right. And you know, probably the only thing stupider would be to stay in there.
Well, I don't know. We're still in Korea. There hasn't been a war since.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, its own special thing, I guess. I mean, that to me is just, it defies, you know, belief. I can't think of too many historical precedents for what's happened in Korea,
right,
where you've got a relatively peaceful but incredibly, you know, contentious dividing line. And it's, you know, it's always a delicate balance, and there's always testings of it and so on. It's kind of crazy. Is that better than what we're going to end up with in Syria? Maybe.
Well, but, I mean,
know,
but
is it worth the price of having all these troops there to make that happen?
But why don't we have? Why don't we use a little forethought, like the British? You know, had their deal with they talked about the original Iraq invasion and how it was the dumbest thing the British ever did, basically listening to us and going with it. I mean, because they're the ones who drew the boundaries, right?
About the stupid boundaries.
Yeah, you got the Kurdish, you got the Sunni, and you got the Shia. They don't like
you. Get out your ruler and your protractor.
Yeah,
here we go. Yeah.
So in we go. Why are we shocked that these people don't like each other?
Right.
And when it comes back to form a government, it's kind of hard to do. And then we had that one morph who Rumsfeld had him on the payroll, and he was going to be the next president when Saddam was out.
And Brummer?
No. We helicoptered the guy in, and they tried to put him up for murder when he was there before, and then he ended up leaving. He ran out of there. He fled. And he was our advisor. You know, just go in there and knock out Saddam, and a guy like me will come in, and everything will be okay. And Rumsfeld listened to this guy?
I mean, yeah. Look at how we treated Saddam Hussein when we needed him. You know, when the Soviets were in Afghanistan, and we wanted... We boosted him. We kind of, you know, gave him the power that he later returned against us. But, you know, there wouldn't have been a Saddam Hussein that we had to fight if we hadn't created one in the first place.
Well, there wouldn't have been a Osama. He was our boy, right?
Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, I mean, what happened, John, back in the 70s when you and I were going underage to the bars in South Bend? If somebody would have stood up on the bar and said, might have been a little later, might have been after we graduated, If somebody would have said, you see, all the Russians people here were talking with glee that they had their Vietnam in Afghanistan. If you'd have said 25 years from now the Russians will be out of there and will be in Afghanistan, you'd have been taken out in a straitjacket. They'd have said, who is this moron?
Right. And this is the legacy we're stuck with now. You know, and that shows no signs of resolving neatly.
No.
Maybe Syria gives us a little bit of a predictor of the kind of blowback that will come from it when we finally do realize how ill-advised all this has been. But, you know, we'll give ground in the long run I guess maybe we're giving less ground than if we had really entrenched ourselves further than we did in Syria.
But these things are...
Horrible situation, but it was always going to be horrible. There was no way it was going to be good, so...
Well, these things are... They don't really necessarily get resolved. Something's messed up. John, thank you very much, buddy. Talk to you next Monday. Have a nice week. SP Futures down 650, 675. NASDAQ Futures down 18. Come back with Mr. David Andelman and talk about how to trade all this whole mess. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures down 7.25. And the futures down 20. Again, we were up huge Friday, up huge Thursday, with the trade deal pretty much completing, or at least phase one, or whatever you want to call it. Now today there's some of the blowback on that from the Chinese people saying that they want another round of talks before Z signs it, and then, you know, is it just an interim deal? Is it something, something? I don't know. I haven't heard anything from the White House yet, not that they're calling me directly, about whether or not the tariffs that were supposed to go in this week or next are going to go in if the thing isn't exactly signed. I've not seen anything like that come across the tape. Have you, Manny? Dow futures are down 61. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 75.6%. FTSE down 31.4% as Boris Johnson has run to a snag with his, whatever he thought he had a Brexit deal on Friday. So Friday, we'll talk about it when I'm done with this, but Friday was like the cat's ass day when it came to the market. CAC down 40.7. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 246, 1.1. Again, these guys were closed before the deal was somewhat consummated on Friday. Shanghai up 34, 1.1. Hang Seng up 213, that's 0.8%. Bonds, all these bonds worldwide are 173 here, so up 7 basis points. Which, so we were down to 148, so it's a pretty good move up. The Bund minus 0.46. In Japan, back up to, it's minus 0.18. I haven't seen it like that in a while. So, it'll be interesting to see if those guys creep past positive. I don't know if it's an inflation thing or what it would be, but somehow or another, they're moving up. Oil down $1.13, 53.57. Brent down 1.5944. Natural gas, 2.29. RBOB gas, 1.61. Gold moving up, but not as much as it was earlier. It's up 8.10, which puts it at 14.96. We had it over 1,500 last time we did this. Silver up 7 cents at 17.62. Manny, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a really good start for a Monday morning on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. It is Columbus Day, so that's probably a big reason why. But very quiet for a weekday on the Edens and Kennedy. Eisenhower looking okay. Same with the Stevenson. I-57 southbound is reopened after it was closed due to a fatal pedestrian crash overnight. That had it closed for an investigation throughout the morning. That's reopened, so that's good news for commuters. No issues on the Ryan or Bishop Ford either. Suburban tollways are all quiet off the expressways. We have a crash at Austin and 28th. And then on the north side, there's a crash that has Irving Park Road eastbound closed between Nottingham and Oak Park Avenue for that crash. So that's you're going to want to avoid Irving Park Road while they work on that crash. One other issue to report, northwestern suburbs, Route 62 at Bateman Road. A car hit a deer this morning, and that has crews on the scene on Route 62. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, very similar to the weekend. Lots of sun, cool temperatures, about 10 degrees below normal, as we'll be in the low 50s, high of 54 downtown. Right now it's sunny and 41 degrees. This morning. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 89 today. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, Bears had their bye week yesterday. They'll host the Saints next week, but it won't be with Kyle Long as he was placed on IR, ending his season and potentially ending his career as a Chicago Bear. Cardinals jumped out to a 27-10 lead and then held on to beat the Falcons 34-33. Sunday Night Football, it was the Steelers over the Chargers 24-17. Steelers led 24-0. Chargers stormed back and made it interesting, but didn't have enough to come back in that one. Lastly, the ALCS is now tied at one game apiece. Houston topped the Yankees 3-2 in 11 innings. Chief.
Illinois was... they were down, what, 28-0 and came back to 28-25, then fumbled twice?
Yeah, at home against Michigan, who's ranked in the top 10 or 12. Yeah, that was a game of two halves, and Illinois really outplayed Michigan in the second half, but then couldn't close it out at the end.
Where do you see the college game? Where do you see the pro game right now? The Packers are tonight. What a good game, right?
Packers and Lions tonight, Monday Night Football. That will be a good one. Both teams are above 500, and with the Vikings winning yesterday and the Bears losing last week to the Raiders when they had the lead late in that one, the NFC North is a jumbled mess right now. The Packers are 4-1, and they'll take on the Lions tonight, who are 2-1-1. And then you have
if they beat them, they'll beat every team in there, so they'll have a game in hand on everybody.
Correct. The Vikings are 4-2 and have won two in a row since the Bears beat them. And the Bears are now 3-2 after their loss last week, and they, of course, had the bye this week. So all four teams are above 500 with the Lions going tonight. It's a good division, and you could see any one of the four teams winning it. I do think the Lions are going to come back down to earth a little bit. But, yeah, it's, you know, the Bears not looking so great as the schedule starts to get tougher. They really needed to win that Oakland game that they blew. Granted, you know, they had their backup quarterback in there. They had some other guys out with injury. I get that, but that was a game they really had to win, especially when they came back and took the lead with 5 minutes left.
Well, Dallas almost pulled that one out yesterday. They were out both tackles, and then they talk about it. Interesting, though. They kept moving it down the field. It just goes to show you how people can make adjustments, because they have two really good guards and a center. So
yeah.
Plus they got Elliott, who's still one hell of a ball player. And he ran for 84 yards in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And then the guy missed the field goal.
After he made a 62-yarder at the end of the first half.
Yeah.
62 yards outside. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And not in Denver either with the altitude.
No. And so we missed the field goal, and then they were down inside, you know, they marched the length of the field like three times and had like 3 points to show for it or something. They still almost ended up winning, didn't they?
They did, yeah. The Jets held on to win. The Cowboys were 7-point favorites on the road. I bet the Jets, not to brag, but
well, that was before the tackles were out and the end was out.
Well, for me, it wasn't even about the Cowboys. One, I don't think they're any good, and two, the Jets got their quarterback back, Sam Darnold, out of USC.
He's good.
Who missed the first part of the season because he had mono, and I guess he had a really bad case of mono, which is kind of weird. I don't think I've ever heard of an NFL player getting mono.
Well,
but
why would they be immune? It happens.
It happens, right. But he came back and they looked like a completely different team. I mean, they were going up and down the field scoring. Dallas supposedly had a great defense. Their defense looked terrible yesterday. Yeah. The Jets had no problem putting points on the board. And then the Jets defense is not very good. So Dallas was able to come back and make it interesting. But, the Jets not only covered, they won outright.
Well, those guys, if Green Bay beats these guys, then, I mean, the Bears essentially, they have to win up there to even that up. Right, which is going to be hard to do.
That would be tough to do. They would certainly be underdogs. The Bears' schedule is one of the toughest in the NFL. In fact, I think it is the toughest schedule in the NFL based on power rankings. They played the Packers, lost 10-3. They were at Denver, who that's a tough place to play. They're at the Redskins, who are terrible. So that was their easy game. They played the Vikings, who are 4-2. They played the Raiders on a neutral field, who are 4-2. They got the Saints coming in, who might be the best team in the NFC next week. They have the Chargers, who are always tough.
You got to hope for like 40 degrees and snow, because the Saints aren't the best like that.
Correct. They're at the Eagles, who are probably a playoff team. Then the Lions at home. We just talked about them. Then at the Rams, who are, you know, were in the Super Bowl last year.
Why do they keep saying the Eagles? They lost again yesterday.
Yeah, they lost on the road to the Vikings, which that's two really good teams.
Yeah.
Then they're at the Lions, which will not be a gimme. Even though they beat the Lions last year in Detroit, the Lions appear to be good. Then the Cowboys, who we were just talking about. Then at Green Bay, that would be one you would like to win. Then they play the Chiefs, who are a Super Bowl contender. And then at the Vikings. So really the only quote-unquote gimme you would see on the schedule would be maybe the Lions at home and maybe the Giants at home. Other than that, every single one of these games, you're either an underdog or it's a 50-50, like coin flip.
Well, and you started the year with the one of the positions, if you would have looked at the entire team, other than some people on defense that are real good, I would have said the interior line on offense with the center, who I think is real good, who I thought a healthy Long and Larson. I don't know, other than the guys from, like, you know, we got that rookie from our second-year man from Notre Dame and Indianapolis. There's a couple of guys that have outstanding guards, but I don't know if anybody had a three-lap combo better than those three, and now two of them are gone.
Yeah, and the whole offensive line has really been bad. And
well, the tackles have been.
Well, the left tackle Leno has just been getting killed.
But the tackles are, I use the term, slightly above average. The guards were outstanding, and now the guards are gone.
Yeah,
which means your tackles are now exposed.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. The left tackle though has just been getting beat over and over again. The right tackle has been really good, Massey.
Yeah,
but they have no running game to speak of right now, and the quarterback has very little time, so it's been a tough go. Now, you're supposedly get Trubisky back this week, and he had two kind of ho-hum games to begin the season, and then he had a really good game three. Now, granted, it was against a bad team, but it was on the road, and he threw three touchdown passes and looked really good. Then he gets hurt the first series of the Vikings, so he's been out. If he can come back and you get some of these guys healthy after the bye, I think the Bears are still in good position to go on a run here, but you can't afford to lose any more games like they lost to that Oakland game. That was awful. I mean, you have to, like you said, it's got, you're hoping for some cold weather against the Saints here, and you got to find a way to beat them at home. Then you have the Chargers at home, same thing, coming in from LA. They're not very good on the road in cold weather. Got to win that game. At Philadelphia is probably a loss. Then you got to beat the Lions. At the Rams, they beat them last year, but they'll be tough to beat in LA.
Yeah.
That's probably a loss. You beat the Giants at Detroit.
Did you hear the drumbeat yesterday about everybody using the day to watch the game where the two quarterbacks, the Bears not only passed on, but like traded like another, some other pick to move up to get.
Those, yeah.
I mean, Mahomes, I would say, is better than Trubisky.
I would say Mahomes, well, Mahomes won the MVP last year.
Yeah.
He's better than everybody.
Yeah.
So everyone whiffed on him. He went, what, 11th or something in that draft? So 10 teams whiffed on him. And then, Watson, I'm not sold on Watson as much. I think he's very good.
But I'm not sold on Trubisky either.
I'm definitely not sold on Trubisky. No question about it. But, I mean, would I be shocked if 3 years from now that Trubisky was better than Watson? No.
It's pretty toss up there.
But I wouldn't be shocked if Watson's way better than Trubisky either. So I could see that.
Well,
what
we see right now is that you didn't have to trade up to get Trubisky.
That's clear. Yeah, that's clear. That, in hindsight, even at the time, a lot of people thought that was really dumb.
Yeah.
They really thought that the Niners were going to take him if they didn't trade up and get him. And I don't know if that's true or not. And I don't even know if it would have mattered because you still had Watson and Mahomes on the board. Watson and Mahomes have, you know, really, really good weapons and ready-made teams, which Trubisky didn't really have. But, you know, now Trubisky's got a really good defense. They've got Robinson, who's a good number one receiver. There's no more excuses. He needs to get healthy and he needs to start playing better. And like I said, he looked really good against Washington. Was that just the product of playing a really bad team, or did he actually take some steps? I don't know.
Well, on Friday, just to change gears here a little bit, let's talk a little bit about the market. Andy, if you were long, probably the three things that, I mean, which makes you wonder about today and this week. You know, what was the song? Is That All There Is? We had the deal with China, which we've been waiting for months for any shred of a deal. So they come out and declare victory there. We had Boris Johnson allegedly having something that everybody was going to accept, and he was sitting there talking to the Irish guy. And you had the Fed come out and say, we're going to buy $60 billion a month for the next however much, which essentially funds next year's $1 trillion deficit. And Carl was immediately sent him emails saying, what the hell? There we go. We're creating money to fund a deficit again. We're doing the same crap we've been doing that has not worked, and we're getting deeper and deeper in the hole. So that pushed the market up, you know, whatever, 300 and some points on Friday. And now today, you know, is it a hangover? I don't know. I mean, this thing with the Fed is insane to me. It's been insane. And yet, I don't want to be right. I don't want to see things crash and say, see, I told you so.
Robert writes in on Twitter, anybody happen to see Trump's tweet at 4:58 Central, 2 minutes before the futures open, about the great deal with China? Complete crap.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to believe that nobody was got in the head of that?
Oh, I mean, I got a question for Robert and anybody, because I am, as everybody knows, I'm not quite the Luddite that everybody thinks I am, but what makes people think that Twitter doesn't have the ability to hold that for 2 seconds while somebody presses a button? Why are you silent all of a sudden?
I don't understand your question.
Well, we're assuming that in the White House, before he tweets, although, to be honest with you, I think he's tweeting from the kid, but everybody's assuming that if anybody's front-running it, it's there. What makes you think that Twitter doesn't have the software to hold on to his tweet for 2 seconds while they get in ahead of it?
Well, that's certainly possible. Very, very interesting.
Why would you assume?
You would think you would need longer than 2 seconds to get ahead of a tweet, but.
Why? If you got any kind of an algorithm that's hooked up to a machine that trades.
Yeah, but, I mean. No, I guess I see what you're saying. And
five seconds, I mean.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Yeah.
And what makes you think that's going through clean?
I mean, your tweets post pretty much simultaneously, but, I mean, if there was a 2 second lag, would anyone really notice? Probably not.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, I don't know how. I mean, we are talking about something that moves the market like every single time. Plus, you notice how, well, he kind of does it during the middle of the night all the time anyway, or most people's middle of the night, but you can move the market a lot more then when there's less players.
Right. So you're getting a lot of flack from some of our listeners pertaining to the last segment about you. Did you actually read the transcript? Which I don't know if you did or not.
I did not. It's not, what is it? I mean, I read bits and pieces. All I was doing was explaining how it was done, which startled me. I thought there was a tape. There isn't a tape. That's a surprise to me. I mean,
no, I understand that, but I think when you got into some of the content, I mean, we got a few tweets here. Kevin writes in, the favor Trump requested was not to investigate the Bidens. It was assistance with the Durham investigation because it leads to Ukraine. We have a 1998 treaty with Ukraine that requires each country to assist in investigations that spill into the other.
Right. Now, the entire theme, I'll tell you what, nobody knows better than anybody who's been on the air. It's not what you say, it's what people hear. What I said is that the bottom line to this whole mess is who's saying what is on the thing or not on the thing, and did you read it or not. The whole point was there is no tape. It's people repeating what they heard people say into a machine that automatically spits out that is then edited afterward. Now, God knows who cares if I read it or not? What am I reading? It's not like saying, did you listen to the tape, right?
Right. I mean, my point is, all we have to go off.
Yeah, that's all we have to go on. I get that part. But now people by the way, everybody knows that the man's biggest fan is me, Kevin. But the point is, whether you read this line by line or word for word or takes it apart like he does, four people have already redone it. So why would I ever consider reading something word for word that four people have had a chance to mess with? If it was a tape, it'd be different.
Joe writes in, Chief, it isn't the first transcript that was moved to more secure storage due to the numbers of leaks of previous calls.
I'm just saying, all I did was say what happened. I didn't say that the other stuff. Now, if you're a Trumper, you're going to say, because people leaked the calls, okay, we had to put it in a secure place. Fine. All I'm saying is that according to this thing that I read, it was not a policy a while ago. Now, maybe it's a policy all the time now. I'm not casting any aspersions. All I said was I was very surprised that when all these people are arguing over the transcript and did you read it, this guy read it, what did it really say, what's the whistleblower, what about people on the call? My thought was, being the dumb that I am, was why have I not heard anybody just say, just play the tape? Well, the answer is there is no tape, because the last time there was a tape, the guy got thrown out of office, right?
Yeah.
That's my only point here. I mean, and yet everybody's accusing me of being all over the block. I'm not. I'm just saying that's what I read. It appears to be accurate, and it's insane to me that you have five people transcribing something instead of just taping it.
Michael writes in, when you were talking about systemic change, he says, people can hate Trump, but if they want true political systemic change, it is a process that has to be endured. Trump is making it easier for the next person to follow through.
Oh, similar, I don't know about that.
Similar to the oldest in the family making it easier for his siblings.
I think that he's going to make it very difficult for a true reformer and a third party or something ever to get in there again, especially if he continues to screw up his foreign policy over in the Middle East. I think, on the one hand, he's opened up some scabs that need to be opened up, and I'm fair to say that he has gone places that I really wish people had gone before. But I also think he's incredibly incompetent, and I think he's he's not well read, and he shoots from the hip on things that he shouldn't be shooting from the hip from. I mean, foreign policy being one of them, not being brief, not being whatever, right? And I think it's a danger. And then hopefully it doesn't get us in a bad spot. I understand there's all over the block on this, but I think character matters, and people keep accusing me of, in a long debate yesterday with a Trumper, a she-Trumper, and I just said, look, everybody, no matter who it is, I said I voted for Clinton the first time because I didn't know all about the stuff over in what was his place? It wasn't Watergate. It was, what was the White House, White something something. Where do you get the property in Arkansas?
Whitewater.
And for me, character does matter. And when he was, I use the term, getting serviced by a 21-year-old girl in the Oval Office, I said I would never vote for him again. That's a problem for me. Because
it was a problem for Republicans at the time, and they don't care about what's going on now, and Democrats are the same way. Character seems to only matter if it goes against your side or for your side, which is why I've made the personal choice to to try to just be less and less political. Well, because I just
But it does affect worth, you, man. It affects you. And
I know
your kids
it does. It affects
else.
Everybody. But I just I don't have anything to gain from it in my life.
I understand.
To get caught up in this,
no, you
I just
can't.
Don't care. And we were talking a couple weeks ago on the show. I mean, there was a time not that long ago, and obviously I can only speak for my lifetime, but growing up in the 80s and 90s and even, early 2000s and college and stuff like that, you never knew people's political, it's just not, you didn't talk about it. I didn't know what my parents believed. I didn't know what any of my teachers or professors believed. I didn't know what my friends or aunts and uncles or grandparents, you just didn't talk about that.
In the Vietnam era, you did.
And you didn't talk about who you voted for. That wasn't like an open thing. You just didn't know. And part of it was I was young, and maybe I just wasn't.
But there was none of this.
It's like the first thing people will tell you is, "What are you, a liberal, or what are you a Trumper?"
Yeah,
it's like and then you basically don't believe or hate hate the person instantly. And I just don't care that much.
Well, the Vietnam thing was Republicans and Democrats were sort of, so it was people against government's war policy. It wasn't against individual power. It was nothing like this. It was different. It was in a way, it was more serious because, people didn't want to go over and get shot, basically. So they were dead serious about it. But it wasn't about, what about this station and that station and this person being a sleazebag or that person or this person. It was none of that stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, today, of this stuff. But I honestly believe it. Anyway, the person I was talking to yesterday, I said, everybody, I'm not asking you to not like the person you like, whatever. I said, I've supported Trump on a lot of the stuff that he's done and wish he would, if he would just focus on those things, I think he actually could have done a pretty good job. I said, but everybody has to have a character issue. There has to be a line, and I don't expect your line to be mine. I said, a lot of people didn't think it was a big deal when Clinton had his little thing. I said, but for me, that's a problem because you are the moral leader. You are the leader of this country. You can't be throwing CEOs out of work because they grab some girls behind at a Christmas party where the chief executive is getting service in the Oval Office.
Right.
I mean, come on. I mean, there needs to be some sort of a... So I gave up on Clinton very early and have never come back. And I think his wife's worse. So I said, whatever Trump does, I'm not asking you to say it's far enough, it's not far enough. Someday, somewhere, you need a spot where you say, even with all the good things I like about him, Maddie, I could be on a board of directors someday if I'm an old fossil, and the way you're improving in this world, or certainly, I would vote for Kevin or John tomorrow to be the CEO of the college that Kevin's in or whatever. And all of a sudden, if somebody wings me an expense report that Kevin cheated on his expense report, I'm going to say he's got to go. I mean, I'm that kind of guy. I mean, we'll find another CEO that isn't like that. The manages to not cheat on his expense account. I mean, my moral stuff is very. I tell you what, it's very low on the page. I think if you're cheating someplace, you're cheating every place.
There's something to be said for that. If you're willing to cheat on something small, like an expense report, like you said, then what else are you willing to cheat on?
But I read this. The thing that I read in this article that I talked to people earlier in the show that everybody's coming at me with. As much as I talked about, I'm surprised about the not being taped and so forth. The thing that really has the hair right up on the back of my neck, the man doesn't want if this is correct, doesn't want a briefing in person, doesn't want a six-page thing, doesn't even want a one-page thing, he wants three index cards. When you start doing that crap, Matty, it makes me very, very nervous. Very nervous. It shows you're not willing, you're so worried about the next tweet against the reporters that you can't do your job. And his job is to be president. I mean, right?
No, I mean,
that to me, and it's funny how nobody picked up on that. I mean, read a book called A Man Called Intrepid. It was about the guy who did the British Secret Service during the war, and he was so convinced that he was trying to save people that were undercover in France and working with the underground and everything. He said the dude's reports would pile up on his desk. He read the equivalent of a Victorian novel every day. And trying to figure out what this person should, this person be still in harm's way, that person. Compare that to the style of leadership we have today. I don't know where we're going. Where a guy's going to get on a call with somebody who doesn't want to be briefed beforehand. I mean, to me, that's unconscionable. I'm not asking people to be me. I'm just saying that bothers me. That in the article is way worse than who wrote what down or who did that and whether the 10 words were this or that. I mean, the fact is, the man doesn't want to be briefed. It doesn't appear. What I'd want to be briefed. I'd want to know everything I was supposed to say and everything about every area before I ever get on the phone. I'd be worried I wouldn't be able to sleep the night before. That would be me. Other people don't seem to care. Why? What if I screw up? I screw up. I mean, that to me is not my style. What can I tell you? Do you agree or not? I don't know.
I would agree with that.
S&P futures down 750. We got to recharge up this morning. That's good on a Monday. By the way, it's Columbus Day, so not much trading going on. The banks are closed. No cash bonds, but the other trades are open. We'll see what happens. We'll be back tomorrow. Stacks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.